Rugby League on Radio Yorkshire with Mark Wilson.
Welcome along. It might be the bank holiday, but the boys are back in town. Been working on a new promo, actually. It's about the A team. I think I've got the B team with me tonight. Gary Schofield, Phil Kaplan and Richard Shorite with you as we look back on a fantastic weekend for the Black and White Hull FC finally winning at Wembley. The sad news breaking this morning, Leeds Rhinos confirming that their club president, Harry Jepson, has passed away over the weekend. We've got two people that knew him very, very well in the studio. They'll give us their thoughts on the rugby league legend that was Harry Jepson. Want your interaction as well, at RL on RY on Twitter. Hull have finally won at Wembley. How on earth wasn't Danny Houghton man of the match? He'll be a happy man. I'm sure he won't have to buy a drink in Hull again. And he's getting a testimonial as well, we can confirm. Next season, this is Rugby League on Radio Yorkshire. And it must have been a good weekend for the Black and Whites, because Scoia wasn't even getting any grief off the Black and White fans. Scoia, you're alive. You've come back.
Cheers, Matt. Yes, brilliant weekend, wasn't it? And did I say, the whole fans from getting off my train Saturday morning to getting off the train yesterday afternoon, did I say, there was absolute respectful and, yeah, great. And the Black and White fans are smiling. There's no 10-5 anymore. They've got rid of the 10-5. Got rid of 10-5. So it's quite simple. Brilliant for the Black and White. And I think we should give a rendition of Old Faithful here tonight, boys. I think we should give a rendition of Old Faithful.
Not until a minute to eight, otherwise we'll be turning off before we've started.
Interesting, interesting. Phil is with us as well, Richard's here. But boys, got to start off with the sad news breaking this morning. Phil, that Harry Jepson, a close friend of yours, has sadly passed away. Age of 96, and what were your thoughts when you heard the news?
Just that Rugby League has lost a link with the past that is unique. We're talking about somebody who was born 25 years after the founding of the sport in 1895, and actually knew people that was at that meeting at the George Hotel, someone who got the autograph of Jean Gallier, who started French Rugby League when he came to Headingley in 1934, and Harry met him and became besotted with French Rugby League and expansionism from that moment on. Someone who's made a huge contribution to so many people without ever putting a boot on. A gentleman in the truest sense of the word, both gentle and a gentleman. I said 3 weeks ago he got a doctorate at Leeds Beckett University. He was a doctor, made a Doctor of Education to go with his OBE, which was for services to Rugby League. And normally you make a little speech, and it's somebody who perhaps the people in the room don't know. Harry stood up and spoke for about 15 minutes in the way that only Harry can, because one thing we have lost is a huge raconteur, wonderful teller of tales. And in the room were all the students getting their degrees, all of their parents, some guests, some friends, some civic dignitaries, and to a person, they stood up and applauded him, gave him an absolute standing ovation. And when we were talking to some of the people at the university afterwards, they said, that's never happened before. And I think that's a measure of the man, that when you were in his company, you were spellbound by him. When you heard the stories that he told, you even went away to check, could they have got that right? So did somebody really step in touch in 1935? He was always correct. But just a wonderful man who, amazingly, never laced a boot. So he's had such an impact on so many people without ever playing the game. And in terms of his contribution, and Gary would be better placed to tell you about that than I would, but things like being a driver of the Colts League in the early 80s, where a lot of players came through and first tasted amateur international rugby league, that was massive. And on the board of directors in the mid-80s, when the game seemed to be a bit stagnant and the Rugby League Council meeting every 6 months wasn't getting decisions made quickly enough, six men were given the were deemed to be neutral enough and fair enough and passionate about the sport enough to be given the job of running the game, and Harry was one of those original six, and that is the esteem in which he was held. We will not see his like again.
We won't. And Gary's a person obviously you knew very well, and not just from your time as a professional sportsman.
No, it wasn't, Mark. And when I heard the news this morning from Phil, and I was gutted, absolutely, because Mr. Jepson was my deputy headmaster at Clapgate School from 5 years of age, from attending there, and yeah, I just Mr. Jepson, not just as a person, as we all knew from a rugby point of view, but, you know, he had a huge influence on my life from a five-year-old, because what Mr. Jepson brought to us, not just myself, but all the pupils at his school at Clapgate, and also to everybody who had associated with the influence what he had, certainly when he's involved with the Colts, and also senior players, who, you know, I can't name them all, because it's quite simple. He's been involved with many, many quality rugby league players and people, but what he brought to us, and certainly the early part of my life as a five-year-old, Mark, was simple, which we don't have today, is discipline and respect. That's what Mr. Jepson was all about. And even to this day, Mark, and even the lads who attended Clapgate with Mr. Jepson, the lads from our rugby team. And by the way, the rugby team, you know, we created there for the coach, Roy Dougal, and Mr. Jepson as well, being the deputy headmaster. You know, we went 4 years unbeaten. We only had one try conceded in 4 years. Just one try conceded in 4 years. And the influence what he had on us, as I say, not just as rugby league players, but as people. And even now, as I just mentioned, that the lads from that team from there, and what we're all in his 50s now, you know, and even to this day, it's always Mr. Jepson. And that's about respect and discipline. And also, what not just what Phil just said about Mr. Jepson, you know, with his his remembrance, and also to, you know, his history of the game, and remembering, you know, which players missed tackles, and which players stepped in the touch, and which players scored the great tries. And Mr. Jepson, you know, was quite simply known worldwide, and the news of his death today, certainly far and wide, not just in France, but also to New Zealand, Australia. This is what sort of respect this man had throughout the game worldwide. And all I can say to Mr. Jepson is thank you very much for the huge influence what you gave me. Also to my two brothers who attended Clapgate as well. And I know Brian and Colin will be just as gutted and devastated as what I am at the death of Farrie. I know he's had a great innings. We all know that, I said, at 96 years of age. But still, to lose somebody who's not just been part of the rugby league family, but has influenced many, many people's lives, it's still a sad loss, Mark. And one thing for sure here, mate, I can reassure you, there will never, ever be again a Mr. Jepson. I just want to say, Mr. Jepson, rest in peace. You will be sadly missed.
And you've been quite vocal in the past about how important it is we remember the greats of our game. Like Phil said, Harry never actually played the game, but he's still going to be a great of our game. How do you want to see him remembered, Gary?
Well, you know, in the game, you know, we've remembered, you know, the late great Mike Gregory, and also to Steve Prescott, so we could maybe something on that line, but also at Headingley. I know, you know, Gary Hetherington, the respect what Gary had for Mr. Jepson, so too does Mr. Carrick from there. And, you know, Headley's getting redeveloped, so, you know, maybe name a part of the stand, the new stand, what, you know, the Harry Jepson South. And I'll tell you what, one thing for sure, there won't be any complaints, you know, from the Leeds Rugby League supporters, that's for sure. So Harry's name, he won't ever be forgotten, but it needs to be remembered in the right way. And so every Sunday, when the Leeds fans and opposition fans, you know, come to Headley, Mr. Jepson's there in front of everybody. And it's quite simple, he was a unique person, unique to rugby league. And one thing for sure here now, if he was a young Mr. Jepson coming into the game, I can reassure you, he would certainly shake it all up, because it's quite simple. He had two loves in life. Well, he had three loves in life. His late wife, Mary, who was a tremendous woman as well. Boy, her boy, she had to pull with a little bit as well, Mary. You know, with Harry, because he was a great character, you know, Mr. Jepson.
He had that twinkle in his eye.
Oh, I did. He was an absolute great character. And I said, the love of his life, rugby league, and also to Leeds Rugby League Club. But I'll tell you what, mate, they will never, ever again be another Mr. Jepson. And he has to be remembered in the right way.
Very good.
So there's, again, there's been loads of tributes and tweets, and people from across the world have been getting in contact, but just read one from Jamie Peacock, who obviously is the next generation after Gary, and probably sums it up for all of us. A wonderful gentleman who was kind, polite, humble, respectful and articulate, a giant of the Leeds Rhinos and the game. And I think that's the important thing. He was a giant of the game.
Absolutely.
He never ever went anywhere without advocating rugby league, how good it was. He took its values. He was always dressed impeccably. I just think, again, we have to find a way of respecting people. Lost Tommy Sale earlier in the year, who, you know, would have been the equivalent. And there is a case for saying that we're starting to do more to recognise our heritage. We were at Wembley at the weekend and the statue is now there, and irrespective of who's on it, there is a statue that honours people of rugby league, and I don't think we can do enough to keep his name alive. It would be nice if he had a stand named after him at Headingley, as you've said. But the other thing we shouldn't forget is that he was a passionate Hunslet man, and that the reason he came to Leeds in the first place was he was so upset about the sale of Parkside and the closing down of Hunslet. And it was then that Jack Myerscough, the Leeds chairman, said, well, I can see what a fabulous job you've done at Hunslet. Come over and help me out a bit with the A-team and be my eyes and ears. And from that, he became football director. I've had texts from Australia from players that he signed when he was over there saying, you know, please even just tell us when the funeral is, because if we can pay some kind of respect, we'd like to. I think the Rugby League Conference has a trophy named after him, and we've said he was passionate about developing the sport, and there's many people playing it. He didn't care where in the country they played, just that they got the taste of rugby league that he so loved. And when the Rugby League Conference was started in the summer of 1998, his name was put on the trophy. And the top two teams, whether it be from Ipswich or Bedford or South London or Cornwall or Wales, that came together and played for the Harry Jepson Trophy, he never missed that final. And he absolutely loved it. He treasured the OBE. He loved the people that he met in the game. But the one thing he was so proud of was that his name was on a trophy that meant expansion and development and more people playing the sport. And that was his highlight of the year. He never missed a single final. He used to be collected from home, and if it was a 10-hour round trip, he would not miss it. Yeah. And that was, again, the measure of the man.
Another thing about him as well, Mike, certainly from the being a deputy headmaster, and the respect what Mr. Jepson had, and you know, the discipline what he brought to our school. Because when you saw him walking down the corridor, you know, you were frightened to death, because this is what influence Mr. Jepson had. You always had to make sure that you walked on the left hand side. There was never no running. And in them days, you remember you could get the cane or you got the slipper. Mr. Jepson never did that. We used to call Mr. Jepson Shaker Maker. Right, and if you got it once, you would never ever get it again. If you had been naughty, you know, in them days, it was quite simple. He would grab you and just shake you, literally just saying to you, don't do that again, don't do that again. But he shook you in a way where you're thinking, oh no. And if you saw him doing that to the pupil, you thought, oh no, I'm never ever going to have that again. And all the pupils who have heard from Clapgate from my day, and even, you know, the Macintoshes and all this sort of thing, and the Herons and what have you, when they would have heard the news of Mr. Jepson passing away today, from what we've known him as well from being a deputy headmaster, you know, being a school teacher, we would all chuckle and say, Mr. Jepson, one thing for sure, I didn't get the Shaker Maker, because quite simply, I didn't want it. And that was another character tally. Again, when I talk about discipline and respect, the purpose of the man, that's what it was all about. And as I said, they will never, ever be another Mr. Jepson.
Yeah, sad time, Harry Jepson passing away. Over the weekend, confirmed this morning. Richard, it's important, isn't it, we don't... I mean, like Phil said, it's hard to believe, isn't it? He knew the people. 121
today,
years old.
Today.
He knew the people involved.
It's the birthday today, isn't it?
If there was going to be an apt day for his passing, today is the day, the birthday.
See, also as well, you know, the Great Leeds Club, you know, we lost Ken Fornett last week as well. And earlier this year, again, another gentleman, Mr. John Harm, who was part of Leeds Rugby League
committee. Billy Watts.
But John was a Rugby League school teacher at Clapgate at the same time. He was in Harry's generation. And our coach, Roy Dougal, you know, because in them days, what happened, well, after 2 years, he got passed on to another coach. But we were so successful, we went to Mr. Jepson. And we said, we don't want to change our course, Mr. Jepson, because Roy's done a very good job. And so he said, OK, and if that's what you want, if that's what you want as a team, then I'll explain to John that, you know, this is not going to be passed over. And then, yeah, Roy came with us for 4 days, but we lost John Arm as well this year. As I say, he was a great rugby league man. And, yeah, it's been, you know, very sad over the last 12 months. But we'll be for sure here now, what we've got to do, and I say the lads who I've been associated with at Leeds and everybody who's associated with Mr. Jepson, one thing for sure I can reassure you here now, we will celebrate his life, we will reminisce about all the stories, we will reminisce about how good he was as a rugby league person, how good he was as a deputy headmaster, and I can reassure you the Shaker Maker will be getting mentioned, because it was part of Mr. Jepson. And I say all his pupils, you know, they'll all be have a tear in the eye, because it was quite simply, Mark, he was a great man.
Who missed that tackle?
I guess it might have been me.
The man who didn't make tackles.
Do you know what? We beat Royal Park 48-3, you know, and we were absolutely heartbroken. It was, I forgot that he was a guy called Dennis at Royal Park, and we forgot his second name now. And then 10 days later, there was a 7-a-side tournament, came to Clapgate. Boy, oh boy, did he get set about. Did he get set about by Alan Foles?
The
guy who got the try. Oh, yeah, he got set about. And did you know we were heartbroken? We were absolutely heartbroken. One try in 4 years, we conceded. We just got conceded there. But, you know, Dave Creasy was there at the time, and, the lads, they didn't sign professional, but the guys like Mark White and Ricky Quarmby and Neil Rayner, who signed Funsit, whatever. We had a great team there, and I said, Mrs. Jepson's influence, he wouldn't have a round ball at school. If you brought a round ball in, I'm telling you, you'd have got the shaker maker. So you didn't, honestly, you didn't either, because he would be squat somewhere and seen, and it was all about discipline and respect. And as I say, if Mrs. Jepson was around here now with schools and this sort of thing, you wouldn't see all the brats getting away with what they got away with, because quite simple, he would not allow it. And it was, again, simplicity, that was what Mrs. Jepson was all about. It was rugby league for the boys and netball for the girls. And one thing for sure with him as well, you don't ever forget to forget your PE kit. Do you know why? Because if you did, you had to wear them silly green shorts. You know what the girls wear for netball? You had to wear them. Nobody got away with excuses. I forgot my PE kit. Doesn't matter. You've got to do it at this school. Get them green shorts on. You only did it once under Mr. Jepson. Only ever did it once.
Very good.
Great man.
Great man. Great to have two people in the studio that knew him so well. And our thoughts with his family and his friends, of course. Right, let's have a look back then. The rugby league, King Kong is gone. Hull FC win at Wembley.
Sensational. Also, as well, just what the Challenge Cup needed. You know, at times, you know, for the first hour, Matt, to be honest with you, I know you watching the other sport, but it was quite simple. At times, for the first hour, we all thought, you know, Warrington to throw the ball a little bit more and be a little bit more expansive, a little bit more asking questions, and you know, there wasn't maybe a lot happening, but certainly for the last 20 minutes, the way that Danny Outon came into the game and the way that his vision and his awareness with his tactical kicking from dummy half, taking the pressure off Mark Snead, he certainly brought the game to life. But overall, for the full 80 minutes, we know King Kong's gone now. He's dead and buried. And the way that the whole fan celebrated, I think everybody else as well, because I guess the neutrals would have wanted the black and whites to get King Kong off the back. They did that, and it was quite simple, a great occasion, and it's what the Challenge Cup needed. Okay, I know Phil will touch about it, certainly from a crowd point of view, where neutrals don't seem to attend anymore, but as I say, it was a great occasion and just what we needed.
Was indeed. I'll get Richard's thoughts. Richard, you were there as well. Were you emotional? You normally are at kick-off time.
Yes, slightly. I was busy trying to concentrate on filling time before the national anthem came on, because you're never too sure when they're going to sing it, are you? It was a game which was very attritional in the early stages, but as time went on, and we got to that second half, and Wyden had that 10-0 lead, and I actually tweeted, so you can go back and see how wrong I was, Darrell Clark's going to win the Lansdowne Trophy, if you could bet on it in play, that's where you should put your money. As it turns out, was wrong, completely wrong. Last 15 minutes, superb comeback by Hull. The tackle from Danny Houghton we'll talk about, I'm sure, and eulogise over for many a year to come. That's going to be the thing from the match that goes on the highlight reel, isn't it, when they look back on Challenge Cup finals in the future. But I thought it was a great ending. Either team could have won it and you wouldn't have had any complaints. An enjoyable afternoon, and for us, of course, the right winners, and a great story comes off the back of it, doesn't it, because now Hull have won the Challenge Cup at Wembley. Hull KR fans must be the saddest people on in the rugby league world this weekend, because they've lost that now. They've still got the qualifiers to play through. But no, fair play to Hull. We all like Gareth Ellis, we all like all the squad, we all like Lee Radford, and they're the winners.
Yeah, indeed. Phil, what did you make of it?
Well, we've got a new iconic moment. You know, and Richard, close your ears. We've had the Don Fox, we've had the Martin Afire try, we now have the Danny Houghton tackle, and we can analyse this until we're blue in the face. We can argue about who should have been man of the match, but it came down to one tackle after 78 and a half minutes, which just happened to be the 52nd tackle of a guy who sums up how and why Hull won that game. He had one option and one option only. There was only one place on Ben Curry's body that he could hit and make contact and dislodge the ball. And to have the presence of mind to do that, the lung capacity to still do that, the technique to still do that, bearing in mind he went down and was treated for cramp the minute he'd done it. That just summed up everything about Hull. And I know Kurt Gidley missed a penalty, which may or may not have been important. I'm not sure, looking back now, that this whole side believed they were going to be beaten, whether it had been 10-0 or 12-0, but the fact that they marshalled themselves and came up with the plays that they needed to do in the latter stages of the game to win that on will and belief in each other says everything about the culture that Lee Radford and Adam Pearson and Motu Tony have built at that club. And it would have been very easy sitting here after that game at Widnes, the notorious supposed lockout of Lee Radford that was embarrassing for the whole club early in the season, and said, well, you know, Lee's been there a while, he's not going to take them any further, they promised again but they're not going to deliver. And Adam Pearson, to his eternal credit, never wavered. This belief that they want more and more guys from Hull to be the core of the team, which has been the success of so many other clubs, but you supplement that with guys from the islands who can do things that win you games. And I would point to Mahe Fanua's contribution in the match as a whole. The fact that Jamie Shaw took the Paul Cook moment, that he was the guy on the end, the local hero that scored the winning try. And for all the arguments we'll have about whether Mark Snead should have won the man of the match or not, his goal kick from near touchline was the difference between the teams. So it had everything. I think the dignity of Warrington in defeat, the fact that Darrell Clark's stats, when you see them the morning after, actually would have made him the man of the match, that Ben Curry as a young kid grew into the game, that overseas players who played so well this year get caught up in the occasion and don't play as well as we've seen them play all season because they have no expectation of a cup final. They don't play them over there. It just had everything. The sun shone for a change. The fans were loud. I just wish there hadn't been so many empty spaces on the terraces.
Yeah, Danny Houghton told us last week, Scoy, I want to be in a team that makes history. He's made his own little bit of history, hasn't he, this weekend?
Has he ever? And as I say, I'm just going to touch on that as well, Mark, and what Phil's saying there as well. So, yeah, it's history. But the great thing as well, just an interview earlier, what Lee Radford's done here, they've been on the parade. And Lee Radford, a fair play, you know, the history of the club, every rugby league club, we all know the history of all the clubs, have all got their own history. And, you know, Lee Radford has said, well, you know, for all the players this great club was played in, who was played in Challenge Cup final, this is for them as well, because everybody tried so hard to get there. But me as an ex-player who played in 85 for Hull and just got beat, you know, in that magnificent final 28-24, I think, you know, these players just enjoy this moment because they have created history. The history is like, it only happens once, you know. If they win it next year, it doesn't matter, they've done it once and they've done something no other player has done, no other coach has done. The supporters who have been there, you know, they're the first supporters who have seen them win at Wembley. The chairman's been there, but I want to, you know, pay a huge tribute to Adam Pearson because, you know, Radders, to be honest with you, the pressure what he's been under, and what's he been in charge now, Phil? Is it 4 years, 5 years? 4 years. But at times, you know, Lee Radford, and, you know, he's had his car vandalised. He could go watch his son play at Skirler because of the stick and the criticism he was getting there standing on the sidelines, you know, so. So
I remember doing an interview with the Odds, I think it was the year Bradford went down, and the interview lasted 90 seconds, and you know when you're interviewing someone who's very uncomfortable, and I turned the recorder, he said, I'm sorry, Mark, he said, I don't know what to say, I can't explain how bad that performance was, and how upset I am.
Yeah, exactly, you know,
so he has been there, hasn't
of course he has, you know, and I say, but great credit, you know, great credit to Adam Pearson by sticking by him, because you know, Radders knows what Hull's all about, you know, and the players, what they've signed now, and I say, Motu Tony's done a great job with his recruitment because, you know, as we all know, the chief executive of the club now, they go, you know, go overseas and bring these players in, but to sell the club, you don't need to sell Hull FC, you don't need to sell Leeds Rhinos, you don't need to sell Wigan, you don't need to say tell us, but what you have to do is say to these players, listen, this is what we expect of you. This is what you have to do. This is the sort of way that we're going to play. This is the sort of discipline you have to do. You have to buy into our philosophies of a club. So they sold that very well to all these overseas players. All grown players, they know all that. But they're also as well, from a Pearson, he's got the man at the right side who are sitting now in the stands in Lee Crooks. So what they've got there now and all this buzzword, you know, in the game is building this culture. Well, what Hull are doing, you know, the team, what they have got now is quite simple. They all know the expectations of Hull FC, and also too, they all know the pressure what they're under, but they can deliver because that's what they are. They're a team. It's as simple as that. All the overseas players, the Kiwi connection, we all know, Phil, the long history of the Kiwis. I was there myself at home with Luluwai, Arcoy, O'Hara and Kemble. So they know the history of that club. And full credit again, as I've mentioned, Adam Pearson, sticky by Lee Radford. I saw Adam Pearson after the game on Saturday. I said, the first thing you must do now, Adam, Monday morning, get Lee Radford into your office and give him a 5-year deal. Don't rest on this, Lollos, now. Don't rest on this, because it's quite simple. They could go on. They could go on. And they can build their own legacy. They've created history. King Kong's gone. See you later, King Kong. It's good night, God bless. You can't say any more, Hull KR fans. You can't have your 10-5 restaurant anymore, because it's all gone now. History's been created. Our great side of the city. Our great side. I'm from Leeds, but still, I'm a black and white lad. You know, and but as I say, Mr. Pearson, full credit to you. You stuck with Radford, Muttle Tony and Lee Crooks. They've got the right people at the club. It's sensational. But I must tell you this little story as well. Yesterday, coming home from the train, Richard, I mentioned to the lads earlier, I was coming on the train yesterday, and all just packed with black and white fans, Hull fans anyway. So there were five of them. Well, there were four Hull fans, and the other lad were a red and white fan. And this is when I mentioned about the Hull derby. It's not rivalry, it's total hatred. And the Hull fans just quite simply said to the red and white fans, said, listen, do you know what way you would be absolutely delighted with at the end of this season? We've won the Challenge Cup and see you lot relegated. That's what we want. That will make our season. But again, it's not the rivalry, it's hatred, and that's what it is for each other. But great for the city, great for the players, great for the supporters and the chairman, and let's build on it.
The other thing that Lee Radford did was that he was brave in dropping people like Leon Price, who's a close personal friend. You know, they played together. You've got to make those kind of harsh decisions if you're going to be successful, and he deserves the utmost credit. I think also coming out of the semi-final, that was a big moment, because he didn't want to play that up. It wasn't enough that they got to Wembley. He remained so focused that this was the job they had to do, and also qualifying for the semi-finals before they got to Wembley. So it takes all of that away, so you could just focus on exactly the job in hand. And it's almost as if Lee Radford's been justified for the decisions that he's made by delivering the one thing that so many people didn't think he could, and
nobody else has done as well. Nobody else has done.
He is such a joy to speak to about anything to do with
rugby league. But also as well, when we look back at the history of the club, and certainly teams that have been played in the Challenge Cup final for Hull, the players who have been part of the teams, the coaches who have been there, you know, these set of players have done it. You know, so it's great for them, and let them enjoy it. But we're Muffy for sure here now. If you're a betting man and any all our listeners out there, if you're a betting man, just get on St. Helens on Friday, because all that's going to be the lads are on the drink. They fully deserve it. Radders, his man management, I'm sure, will be here. Listen, we're staying on the drink all week. We're prepared for the next week after. And fair play to them, they fully deserve it, don't they?
Absolutely.
There would be if I were head coach anyway.
You're not supposed to.
England assistant.
We'll talk about that after.
You're not supposed to cheer, you're not supposed to clap when you're in the press box, but there was one moment in that first half where the emotion of the situation caught up with Jamie Scholl's tackle on Chris Sandow, and it'll get lost in history now, because it wasn't the most important moment of the game, and they scored a play later. But for him to chase him back, much like the Houghton tackle at the end, it showed how much it meant to these players that he would run and chase him down and tackle him, and then he scored. But then for him to score what turned out to be the winning try, great. I was stood there applauding. I think I was not supposed to applaud him. I'm supposed to be...
Well, you won't be invited back.
No, I won't be back. But that was a great moment. I should also say as well that the school's final, which kicks off before we're allowed into the stadium, so it's a bit daft. It's not as if there isn't plenty of time before the game. And the game kicked off late anyway, which is a nonsense. Castleford winning. Fantastic try to win it. Kick across from, I think it was the number 12, the second rower, and a try at the corner. And I think the conversion was better than Mark's needs in the end, because he's a little lad, year 7 lad, kicking it from almost the same position, just over the bar. Castleford Academy win. Well done to them.
I felt like I tweeted it out, because you were telling me, we were on the air, and you told me, and I looked on Twitter and I actually could see it. I thought that was good. That was definitely a step forward.
It was a great vision and awareness. Yeah. I don't know what Scotty thinks about a number 12 kicking across to the winger, but it was superb.
They'll develop into a number 6. What is he, about 6 foot 6 or something? Yeah, the way the game's going nowadays, yeah, they'll develop into a number 6, won't they? Yeah, great.
Calm down, Scully. Calm down. Greatest moment of his life, and you're rubbishing him.
Great.
Yeah. Rugby.
So well, well, great to see Sekiroa's kicking the ball. Do me a favour.
Well done to all the Casa Canby teams. I think a team from Halifax won as well. And Outwood Grange, my old school, they won the Year 8 Girls' Final as well. So
I'll tell you what as well, Matt, and boys as well, and credit to the radio show, the show on a Monday night. The amount of people who came up to me and said, Scott, your show, what you do on a Monday night, is sensational. All it is, true and honest. You make everybody laugh at what you do, you give honest opinions. So all the people who saw down at Wembley there for the nice, kind words, what you say about our radio show on a Monday night, yeah, cheers, keep listening.
It's nice.
It is to get the feedback, isn't it?
It is. They must like it if they're telling you they like it, because, you know, we all know people like to stick the boot in on you.
Actually, a few of them said, you know the voice of Mark Wilson? He sounds as though he's got the face for radio score. Is that right? So I said, two righties, mate. Two righties.
Yeah. What you didn't tell him is I'm the better looking half of our duo.
You're the better looking of the A team, are you?
Oh, dear. Great day, great occasion. Thought it came across well on the I was working during the Leeds United stuff. I've got to be honest, I had it on the iPlayer. Listen to the last 5 minutes with you lads. I could hear Craig's heart breaking when he thought Ben Curry had scored. But I thought it came across well. I want to pay tribute to Tony Smith and Warrington, who were very, very gracious in defeat.
Chris Hill, who would have been another candidate when you see the stats for man of the match, led his team magnificently, did every interview afterwards, and Tony Smith, who genuinely revelled in what Lee Radford had achieved. Tony Smith's a man who is passionate about coaching development, and I think he can see a wider picture than, yes, it's heartbreaking that all the effort that Warrington have put into it has ended literally about 3 inches short of glory. But to be so composed and so dignified and to pay such a fulsome, honest and genuine tribute to what Lee Radford had achieved was everything this sport's about. And I think, again, the way Warrington as a team behaved in the face of such heartbreak, and they possibly over the course of the entire 80 minutes didn't play as well as we know they can. They did have to put up with the disruption of Kurt Gidley going off and Ben Westwood, obviously, who's very important to them and keeping them in the game. But they almost won it. You know, we shouldn't look past the fact that but for Danny Houghton's moment of absolute brilliance, that all the Warrington fans, there are pictures of them this morning in the papers, genuinely thought that Curry had scored. And that's how close they were to him, to be so dignified and composed afterwards. To pay such a tribute to the way Hollard played and who he would have given man of the match to, which again, Danny Houghton, of course, I thought was brilliant. And the unsung hero for me of the day, I thought the referee, Gareth Hewer. We'll talk about referees and issues going on within refereeing, but there were some eyebrows raised. How could we give it to a part-time official, bearing in mind we've gone down the last 3 or 4 years of full-time officiating? I thought he was absolutely brilliant. On a very hot day, he timed the water breaks well, because there weren't many natural breaks in the play. Gave very few penalties. Just kept the game flowing so that it was the entertaining spectacle that it built up to be. He had obviously a decent rapport with the players. There was no dispute. And coming back, reading all of the tweets and everything, all social media, nobody was criticising the performance of the referee. Nobody was complaining on either side that he'd made a big mistake.
I tell you what, though, brilliant. I tell you, and Mark and Rich, you know, we all watch games week in and week out. Why can't referees referee at this every week?
Absolutely.
You know what this tells me? It tells me, From that channel cover, it Thursday and Fridays and whatever, Saturday nights or whatever they're going to change, it tells me they have an influence on our referees, the way they referee. Why can't the referee of that week in and week out give what they see, 6 penalties maximum a game? You know, because that's the way they want to referee.
Went to the screen once, I think. I'm sure there were a couple of head-high tackles as well.
What's wrong with that? It's a contact sport.
That were let go because it was deemed to be, you know, in the heat of the battle. Nobody was injured. You know, we're not condoning anything to do with concussion. There was nobody left lying on the floor. It was just something that perhaps rode up from a shoulder. We've seen those penalised during the season. He let the game flow, and I think he contributed to make it the spectacle and the exciting final.
So there's something out of rugby league now, because some thoughts of Workington and Whitehaven have been beaten today, so it looks like they're going to get ready. So Gareth Hewish from Cumbria, from Whitehaven. Something good's coming out of Cumbria.
Of
Cumbria.
Just a word for Hull, Rich, because they beat Saints, they beat Catalan, they beat Wigan, and they beat Warrington. So they've done this the hard way. I mean, can't say it's the perfect cup win, but they've beaten everybody en route, haven't they?
The thing that struck me at the end of the game when the hooter went was, as much as, and from watching the TV pictures, you'll see Gareth Ellis and so on and so forth, all these people jumping around and celebrating. I think there were as many Hull players on the floor just trying to get their breath back as they were Warrington players who were obviously down in defeat and despair. But you knew that every single player out there had given everything, and that's why none of the 76,000 walking away from the stadium could have any complaints about the performance of their team. And it was a great occasion. The first half, I know people say, oh, the first half was boring, this happened, this. In the end, you didn't know who was going to win up until the last minute, and that's what we wanted. That's what we've been saying we've been wanted. Yeah, it may have been a bit cagey in the first half, but these are the top two sides in the division feeling each other out on the biggest occasion of the year in front of a national TV audience, plenty watching on from around the world. Of course it's going to be tight in the early stages. We didn't have the point stress we thought. Martin Carlin predicted it, right? We got it completely wrong.
But then we are dealing with two of the best defences in the competition. There are two other people I think that deserve mention on the whole side. You've just touched on one of them, Gareth Ellis. I thought his reintroduction in around about the 50th minute just settled everything down for Hull. And he is a colossus. You know, you have to have a leader when things look like they're not going your way and you need that re-injection of belief. To put somebody like Gareth Ellis on was huge. But the other one, and it didn't even enter the game until the hour mark, was Danny Washbrook. Because at that point, Hull was struggling for direction. And yet, we'll talk about Mark Snead and his brilliant kicking game, and that's what's won him the Lance Todd Trophy. But Carlos Tumivavi was not as decisive as perhaps Lee Radford would have wanted, and the options he was taking, even his team didn't know he was going to do it. Just needed somebody to slip into that pivotal role and just calm it all down and say, I'm only here to try and make the good guys good. I'll move us around to where we need to be. I'll let Mark Snead do the kicking. I'll let Danny Houghton do the jumps out of dummy half when he sees fit. And I thought, and he didn't get enough credit for it, Danny Washbrook did that for Hull. It was a vital role that he took on, and he took that on as Gidley was coming off injured. And yes, the 40-20 from Snead physically changed the momentum of the game, but I think that axis changed a little bit as well when Washbrook came on. And of course it meant everything to him being a Hull lad.
It did indeed. What a weekend for the city, or the black and white part of Hull. They're at Saints on Friday, Scully. They're already in the top four.
And I say it's quite simple. This week's going to be a week of celebration, and the whole fans know that. So, but they'll still travel in plenty. Now, I tell you what, do you know the player who'll be putting his hand up and saying, "I want to play Friday night"? You know what we're going to say, don't we? Danny Houghton, he'll want to play Friday night, won't he? Mm-hmm. You know, even though he might be on the drink with the lads while Thursday, so he'll say, "Yeah, I'll play." You know, that's a sort of attitude what he has, and the man himself. But no, listen, you know, saying something like that, yes, lovely, yeah. We'll have all Friday night. But listen, it's simple. They create history, they'll have a week, enjoy themselves on the week, and they'll be allowed a week off, you know, and then get ready again. But as you mentioned there, Mark, there's no pressure on them. They're on the top four, and I think what do they need to win? Maybe two games out of four to finish either first or second. So that's going to be their goal now, to have a finish first or second to make sure they get a home fixture. And they realise they're only 18 minutes away from the grand final. Mm-hmm. And as I've said throughout the season, you know, I've been very, very good with my predictions this year. Bearing in mind, I picked Hull to win the Challenge Cup. And also, as well, I said Hull could do the treble.
You did last week.
Hold on. I back myself up here. You know, and I know we all have, you know, we'll have recordings of what I've said throughout all the year. And, you know, Hull for the treble. You've heard it here first. You're laughing at Matt Wilson. Richard Shaw, right, and Phil.
I'm surprised you want to come on and say Warrington could still do it.
Do you remember we said Catlands were going to win it? Do you remember that one?
Had we all been out on the drink?
That was the same week Dave Taylor was going to be Man of Steel. I think.
All right,
when
sorry,
we heard it, Miller,
and Jacob Miller.
When we heard it first was last week, but.
Who thinks Chris Chester is going to be coaching? Does anybody think that?
Did I mention Lee Radford might be a better?
Does anybody still think Chris Chester is going to be coaching?
A question though, if you were a club other than Hull, would you sign Steve Michaels? Bearing in mind that he did a really, really raw and emotional interview afterwards, was absolutely...
Why aren't they signing him? Why aren't they re-signing him?
Because he takes a quota spot, which means they've got somebody else lined up who's going to take it. But they've got some really good young outside backs that he knows they're going to be...
Fair play.
Because he was saying, I can't be disheartened or disappointed, because guys like Callum Lancaster need to play. So I think he realises that he would be a luxury in that back division next year. But wouldn't you sign him the way he's played over the last 3 months?
I understand he's on quite a lucrative contract. And I must admit, the first few months I went to see him, I thought, this guy is no good.
But the last three months?
Last year or so, I think he's a good player.
Well, what he's done, Matt, right? Well, let's not forget who signed him. You know, it was that other King Kong himself and Sean McRae. Do you know what I mean? So they didn't have that culture. They didn't have that philosophy. Say, listen, this is what it is here. This is what, and that's what now, and Radford, Crooks, Adam Pearson and Motul Tony have brought. So Michaels has realised, well, listen, if I don't buy into this sort of philosophy, you know, I'm not going to be playing. You know, it's simple as that. So again, that's what's changed that player into the form what he's hitting in, because it's quite simple now, the black and white. It's the way they played this year. We all know. And on Saturday, again, they brought it in. They found a way to win. Mm-hmm. They found a way to win out of the full 8 minutes. But one thing for sure here now, there's competition for places, and if you don't play well week in and week out, you're getting left out. And that's what Michaels has done. And he's got his attitude right and realised that if he doesn't play well week in and week out, then he's going. But all full credit to Hull. They want to bring in the young players. They want to bring in new blood for themselves. They've got some quality.
They've got Jack Logan as well, who's been injured most of the season.
As we saw last year when they all got introduced against Wigan, we all know what a great performance they put in there. They see what sort of quality they've got coming through their ranks, and full credit to Hull for going that way.
Mm, yeah, no, fair enough. It's an interesting one, and I guess time will tell.
Would you have him at Wakefield? You don't really need a winger, do you?
No, we've got loads of wingers. Hopefully. So, you know, we'll see. It's the exciting time of the season, isn't it? It's who's going where? It's Rugby League's own transfer deadline day, but goes on slightly longer.
Well, we'll have a look in the second hour of some of the moves, etc., that have been confirmed or that have been muted to be happening. We'll get those out there as well.
Apparently there's some games today as well.
Yeah.
We'll give you the results.
At RL on RY.
Top four in the Championship Shield, all Yorkshire clubs. We're strong in the not quite as good as the top team.
I know Bilko's been quite vocal. Bank holiday, another bank holiday goes by. We know top flight rugby league. Mm. Yeah, they're missing out here, aren't they?
Absolutely. I think, I can't believe how little promotion the four games that have been played today have had. They've not been featured anywhere, they've not been previewed anywhere. It's almost as if they've been tagged on to the weekend and gone by unnoticed. Can you imagine if we had a couple of Super League games, perhaps even one of them televised today?
There was nothing else going on today. The cricket semi-final, which, yeah. Sky have been showing repeats of Formula One practice. That's how little's
practice.
On today.
Practice.
Interesting.
No, I agree with him 100% with that. We need to showcase the sport, as witnessed by the poor crowd that we had at Wembley.
Yeah, let's talk about that. Relatively speaking, we've done the good bit. You know, let's have a look. Realistically, 76,000 red seats,
lowest for 10 years. And when you take away the fact that the Olympic Gallery is counted as part of that attendance, and that's normally roughly 15,000 seats, you're talking about 60,000 tickets sold. Fantastic that Hull sold somewhere between 25 and 30,000. Brilliant that Warrington sold up to maybe 15,000. That's not, then you've got obviously your dignitaries who should be going. It's a celebration day. That's not a lot of neutral. And Scully. There's not a lot of neutrals there. When Richard and I travelled down on Saturday, the one thing that you don't see on the motor anymore are coaches or cars with scars of clubs that aren't playing. You don't see kids coming down on school trips because we're playing in the school holidays. You don't see working men's clubs from neutral areas organising the tour a year in advance.
Well, we started going from where in the village where we live. We used to all go every year. Bus trip.
Didn't matter who.
Absolute carnage.
Who's arranging that now?
No one's gone, hasn't it? It's done.
And I think there's two reasons for that. One is
so should it be moved then, Phil? Should it be moved from August?
Yes, it has to be. Yeah. Well, it has to be moved from a bank holiday weekend. This is the worst weekend you could possibly play because of the numerous competing attractions, not least in the south of England. What we want to do is get a neutral fans there who live close to Wembley and say, oh, look, if you're going to go to a sporting event, one of the big ones of the year is the Challenge Cup final. You may not support either of the teams, but come along, because like people go to the NFL and people go to the FA Cup final, it's a neutral's paradise going to Wembley and getting beer and seeing a great game.
This weekend at Wembley, it's international week, so there's no football, and England play on the Sunday. So what's on at Wembley this weekend? A doubleheader of Premiership Rugby Union. which no doubt they'll be flooding the market with cheap tickets, and which is exactly the right thing to do, because then you get a crowd in and say, oh, we've got a world record attendance, and they've got it on the a week where there's nothing else.
But this bank holiday weekend that we're still in has all the music festivals, it has all outdoor activities. People go on holiday because it's the last chance before the kids go back to school. It's a renowned weekend for travel. The motorways had a lot of traffic on them, but they weren't going to Wembley. So this August bank holiday weekend doesn't work. The other thing I think is that the romance has slightly gone out of the cup, that it felt like a high quality Super League game that we were watching, and that one was playing two. So if you're not, if you're a neutral, you don't really have any to support, you're probably not going to go. And where we have had Hull KR and Castleford in the last 2 years, the results have been more easily predictable, so we had the right game, but not enough people to see it. Something's out of kilter. That we wandered around playing the game of count the shirts of all the other teams. There was two or three people from Workington. There was the odd four from Wakefield. There was a couple from Bradford. There were two people from Leeds who'd still been there from the year before, I think.
Didn't see many from OKR. No.
Craig Murdoch blanked me when I said Workington, though, so I don't know if they were the right people or not.
But the neutral fans are not flowing down Wembley Way anymore.
I remember, Mark, and this will come as a surprise to our listeners. You had an argument on Twitter with someone about, was it 2 or 3 years ago, about ticket prices at Wembley because they were cheap. And people were arguing.
Was it the grand final?
Was it the grand final?
It was, yeah.
People arguing that we're selling our sport too cheaply. But the same argument can be made about Wembley and the Challenge Cup final, because you've got the extra traffic of, of going to London. If we were selling everything out, then you can have tickets at so much.
Yeah.
But when we're not, when we need to sell it out, because it does look bad on TV with empty seats.
It's almost like they need to do what they do at the Gabba and make all the seats different colours. The RFL should buy 20,000 different coloured seat covers, and it looks like on the telly there's people sat there. But it does need addressing. It does need addressing, and I think they got away with it a little bit last year in the grand final, because it was the final everyone wanted to see. And I think from a neutral's point of view, everyone wanted to see if Sinfield and his players had got on a high. But I don't know.
If it's Wigan versus Saints in the grand final this year, as big a fixture as it is, I watched it 2 weeks ago, I won't go pay to see it as a neutral.
You know, and in fairness, Hull play Warrington again in 3 weeks or whatever, and then they could play each other again in the playoffs, so that would be three times in 5-6 weeks. It's too much, isn't it?
Oh, it is, yeah, it is. As Phil said there, you know, for mine, I think it should be moved, and I think Phil maybe mentioned previously that maybe moved to June. So yeah, I think that's the biggest problem for us. It's the wrong time of year, simple as that.
Absolutely. It's the hardest weekend to sell anything. And yet we try and sell our showpiece game, of which so much was right this year. The choir was great, made up of fans. Lizzie looked stunning. The game was magnificent. The weather was fantastic. But we couldn't get enough people down there to fill the stadium, which is a shame.
Does he looking at? Don't want to be doom and gloom, but we're going to speak in hour number two as well about the report in that Danny Lockwood has done today with the refereeing, and you just get the feeling that the pressure might just be starting to build on the RFL fellas. I don't know what you think. We'll go to the refereeing report a little bit more after seven, but there is just a couple of cracks.
And I think we all know the reason why John Sharp got the bullet from the RFL in charge of the referees, and now it looks like you know, it's not a made-up story, this is it. You know, Danny Lockwood is a very, very respectful journalist, and I say the editor of the League Weekly, what it's seen from there. So this is really damaging, not just for the RFL, but certainly from the refereeing specialist department now, because as we know, they're full-time, you know, and all this bullying, what they're going on there, and I say there's a scheming attack on the ex-boss in John Sharp. So, yeah, this is very, very serious allegations.
When you add that to the disquiet about the disciplinary committee, because we've now had St Helens coming out at the latest club last week saying, you know, it can't go on the way it is, and yet you know, the indications are, oh, there isn't a problem. Well, there clearly is.
There is a problem.
There clearly is.
There is. And also as well, you're looking at full-time referees, okay, and then this weekend at Wembley, we had a part-time referee doing a sensational job. So now the question will be, I'll ask the question, it's quite simple. Do we really need full-time referees?
Or how much have we spent getting to the point where we're now appointing a part-time referee
exactly. So
to the final? It can't be fitness or game awareness, because it was brilliant.
This is what I'm saying. So with them going full-time now, has it made him any better? I can tell you, as it else, not a chance has it made him any better being full-time. All he's done is just up their egos a little bit from that point of view.
In fact, all the officials at Wembley, on field, were all part-time.
Mm.
Which was, again, interesting.
Mm, it was indeed. Was indeed.
I don't suppose there's any Hull fans tweeting him, because they're all...
Lost over the pop, I think.
All be on the source, won't they?
I would hope so.
They should be. They should be. There are tweets coming in at RL on our one.
Andy sent in a couple. First of all, saying, asking, you know, why aren't people going to Wembley? He said he showed that Warrington, having been to four finals in the last 8 years, has probably affected the crowd. Why a need to win the grand final for their sake? I think we said after the game, or we said before the game, if Hull won the Challenge Cup and Warrington won the grand final, everyone will be happy. So we'll find out what happens. He also said he thought Wye were the better side, but Hull took their chances. A great cup final for once. How will this affect the team? So now, well, depends on how much celebrating Hull do, I guess. I think because Warrington were so close, but they weren't necessarily outplayed. It wasn't a dodgy decision. It was just one moment, perhaps, that changed the game. They can't go on into the rest of the season going,
no,
because they gave everything in that game.
But also, as well, though, Rich, but at the end of the day, Matt Richards, again, in our days, you know, 15, 20 years ago, it didn't matter who was there. You made Wembley the weekend as well. We know it in MD, it was back in May and this sort of thing, and we know circumstances, we bank holidays now.
And it was the end of the season.
Correct. The end of the season, but it didn't matter who went. You know, we all know when Wigan went there, what, 8 or 9 times on the top. But still, loads of people again from Cumbria, from Leeds, from Hull, from Bradford, wherever, Dewsbury, Batley, wherever, they went because it was the Rugby League Challenge Cup final. So that's what we have to try and get back to. I'm not buying into this nonsense because Warrington have been there 4 times out of the last 6, and you know, and so, no. Rugby League fans, they supported the Challenge Cup final because it was the biggest competition in World Rugby League. It's as simple as that. So we need to, for whatever reason, why we've lost them, we don't know. We need to find out the reason why, and then we need to try and get them back.
And we went to complain about the price of chips and beer.
Well, I'll tell you what, £6.5p for a pint of bodies.
Well, you're all right. You can only drink a couple anyway.
The LERC diary says the magic weekend has taken away neutral fans from the cup final. I guess you get to see your team there. And Steve Austin said, great game, but the players' mic is a joke. It sounds like a Turkish baths. I'll set up a whole new Challenge Cup, Saints grand final, says Steve. We say Saints fan. I think it's a gimmick, the players' mic.
A player were mic'd up?
Yeah, they do.
One on each side.
All the time.
Who was it?
I think it's a gimmick.
Who was it?
I don't know.
They had one on each team.
If it wasn't for the players...
And it might have been Houghton. It might have been Houghton and Clark, the two hookers.
Yeah, get sure of it.
If it wasn't for the players, Mike, Ashton Sims wouldn't have the media profile he has now on the BBC.
Of course he would. He's got long hair. You've no chance, Mark Wilson.
I'd love some hair.
You've no chance of an eye profile, have you? Huh? With that bush you've got.
What are you being like that for?
I'm going to be honest, as we are on the show. That's what Radio Yorkshire's all about.
I can't argue with that either, can I?
No, so you better go to the news.
What I can do is, we'll get the news on in a minute and I'll give him a good idea. And he's P45. This is Rugby League on Radio Yorkshire. We'll be back with more very, very shortly indeed. At RL on RY, we're going to be talking about that story in League Weekly after 7 o'clock. Have you had your say? And we're going to be talking about the advert for the England assistant coach.
Proper sport at 6. Rugby League on Radio Yorkshire with Mark Wilson.
Scully's gone. We've kicked him out. He's gone.
He's got a promotion to T-boy.
He's T-boy now. So actually, we'll put that down on his CV because we're going to enter him for the New England assistant coach. We'll come to that in a minute. I mean,
laughable that England Rugby League are advertising for an assistant coach.
It's good news for
the back of the newspaper.
Good for League Express, though, because they get some money from advertising.
They do indeed.
If they're trying to advertise the job on Radio Yorkshire, just send us an email, we'll negotiate a fee.
We'll sort it out for you. At RL on RY, we will discuss the England assistant coach's job. We're going to look at that article as well in the League Weekly today. Just want to update you as well. Obviously, there's been an incident involving three Wakefield Trinity Wildcats players over the weekend. I think it was Friday, wasn't it? And we have got an update from Michael Carter, who confirms that Richie Owen is still in a hospital. He's had to have an operation on his arm, but should be out in the next 2 or 3 days. One of the other players, Chris Anakin, dislocated his hip. He was in line to make his comeback after injury this weekend, but he is out of hospital. Not had an operation as such, but has had his hip put back into place and some work done on an ankle problem as well. We don't know how long he's going to be out for. And Danny Kermond out of hospital, he's got a deep cut in his ankle, and it looks like it may have caused some damage to a tendon. They're not sure how severe. So, I mean, Richard, your club, I mean, not great, is it, that one? Michael is liaising with police, trying to find out exactly what happened. Should have some idea by the end of the week, but yeah, it doesn't sound great, does it?
No, obviously we don't know what's happened, which kind of makes it difficult to talk about it, doesn't it? But you obviously hope that all three of them recover very quickly. Dislocated hip sounds like a very nasty thing to suffer, especially as a rugby league player. So hopefully that doesn't cause too much damage to his career further down the line, but I think Michael Carter summed it up when he tweeted this morning. 3 years ago he took over the club, and he wished he'd stayed on the sunbed. Do you think for all the good moments the club has had this year, getting to the semi-final, reaching the top eight by whatever method, something always seems to come along, ground being sold, moving potentially, this, that and the other, and now this, and something always seems to come along to put a big grey cloud over Bellevue. It never seems to shift, does it? So yeah, hopefully all three get better soon.
I think Michael said something as well about hoping there'd be a decision on the ground by the end of the month, and that is this week, isn't it?
Yeah, no news on that one, apparently. No. I know he had a meeting with the new owner last week, and he seemed quite confident, or quite positive, should I
Good.
Say. About
well,
that.
I mean, they've already started doing demolition work, haven't they? The old bowling alley's gone.
Yeah.
So you'd hope that discussions were quite advanced as to... Obviously, the rent that they would charge Wakefield to stay there, but also perhaps working with them to upgrade the facilities that they've got, because it is the one big thing that presumably is holding everything else back.
And
I know that Michael at one stage was hopeful that he would have the people and backing behind him that could buy the ground for himself, and obviously then you're in charge of your revenue streams, and just hope he can get a preferential deal that sees the Wildcats as a long-term tenant for a relatively small amount of rent and some degree of certainty that they can upgrade and make their facilities a little bit more permanent.
Yeah.
So I know he's worked hard to get to that point. He must be disappointed that his own bid didn't, or the bid of the consortium that were backing him didn't come to fruition.
Are you worried about that, Rich, or...?
I've said plenty of times on this programme that what is Wakefield Trinity? If I went and bought Wakefield Trinity, what do I buy? And the answer is just a name on a bit of paper, because they own nothing. The ground hasn't belonged to Wakefield for a few years now, and the decision to mortgage the ground, have it end up in the hands of the Bank of Ireland, has left the club where it is today with a firm financial footing in the way it's been run by Michael Carter, Chris Burlington and everyone else and all and sundry, but it's all quicksand, isn't it? Because when Bellevue doesn't exist anymore, and I know people still go, oh, well, I wish we could stay there, I wish we could redevelop it. It's pie in the sky, it's gone. And forget about Newmarket. It ain't happening. If it was going to happen, it would have happened years ago. And yes, the club's been sold down the river on that one. But as was ever thus, it's been sold down the river 100 times before. Wakefield Trinity is in the position it is because they, as a club, previous owners, put the ground in the situation where it is now. So there's nothing any of us can do about it. You just have to get on with it and stop moaning about the council and whatever. And if we have to go to Dewsbury or wherever to play rugby league, so be it. It's our, the end situation is of our own making.
Okay. Fair enough. We'll move on from that one. There have been games this afternoon. We'll give you the scores on those. It seems bizarre, doesn't it, that, you know, literally, if you're not looking for it, Phil, you wouldn't know that today's a rugby day.
Absolutely. If you're going to have these matches, promote them. If you're going to have games on Bank Holiday Monday, then throw in some matches, again, that raise the profile of the sport overall, because with the greatest respect to those clubs that are in the Championship Shield and off, hopefully, you know, fighting their battles against relegation, it's not the most attractive game for the neutral fans to go and see. So we have to do more, put on greater fare for those of us who, this afternoon, I mean, I'm sure you would have covered a game, wouldn't you, if you'd have said the commentary team. Live sport always wins. But it wasn't promoted enough.
No.
As and I don't even know, I haven't seen the crowds at the games, but I'm suspecting that even if they're local derbies, that they've not been great.
It's a shame Castleford and Wakefield could have moved their game from last Sunday to Friday to this Monday. It wouldn't have caused anyone any harm.
Exactly, and they would have. That is a game that neutrals would have gone to see.
And you know, it's a shame that TV moving. And I know TV pay all the money. I'm not blaming Sky for this because, you know, without Sky, where are we? Jeez. But because they move Castlewood's game to a Thursday at St Helens, so great night for all the Cass fans to travel there. Well done, TV. Cass have moved their game against Wakefield from the Sunday to the Friday because they want extra time to prepare for that, and that's fair play to them. It's not. I'm not blaming.
Yeah, but how much money does it cost them, Rich? You know, well, you know, Steve Gillis saying, you know, how much revenue is it costing?
Sunday afternoon, you get a bumper crowd. Oh, easy. Of course you would. Get to the pub across the road.
This is what I'm saying. How much money is it going to cost Cass, you know, moving it from Sunday? Because the reason why they play Sunday afternoon is they may have tried it in the Super League era playing Friday nights, but the fans don't want it. That's why they kick off at 3:30 on Sunday afternoon, because they know that's what the fans want.
Yeah, Steve Gill has labelled the rescheduling of the two games as ridiculous.
And rightly so, Mark.
So they were going to play Sunday. They had to bring it forward to Friday, just purely because Cass's game at St Helens has been picked for the following Thursday. He said, "Can I take this opportunity to apologise to our fans for any inconvenience caused? We've been informed by the RFL that the game's been moved, and basically that's that." So it's, I don't know. I think that's really, really poor form. I have to say that.
Why does it have to be a Thursday night? Why are you saying it's Cass on a Thursday night?
But this is the same Castleford that lost £100,000 in the eights last year. And that is the worry, that whatever the rights and wrongs of the structure, and we've debated it before, and I'm sure before the end of the season we will, I'm still of a mind that it does need tweaking, and it's nothing to do with every minute matter. And it's exactly this, that clubs who think they've got... I mean, games have only just been announced for the eights at very short notice. We don't get them until 10 days before the first games are played. You get the schedule, you make your readjustments, you change your holidays or your weekends away or whatever, and then you find that it's changed again because of Sky. Mm-hmm. They should, and I appreciate they can't because they don't know what the results are going to be, but every Thursday night should be sacrosanct, so that when they announce the eights and the seven Thursday games, we know what they are in advance, even to round seven. And that way, it doesn't impact on the other games. They've got to change for the duty of care reasons of making sure that players don't play.
Why do we play? Why do we play Thursday nights?
Because Sky have a schedule.
Why the RFL, surely the governing body, say, listen, for the sake of the game, for this and for our supporters, we're not having Thursday nights. We tried Saturday, that were a failure, so we're not having Thursday nights.
I think it's 122 million reasons why the RFL don't say that.
Well, we know what's, you know, the money involved, but quite simply, common sense has got to take place, hasn't it? Common sense.
But
anyway, common
sense? Common sense would have been, as Richard said, to move that Castleford Wakefield game to today, to this afternoon.
Yeah. And you know, Wakefield are not happy about it either, are they?
No,
it's
sure
not a financial thing for them. It's the fact that, hang on, we've had to move our game, and you know, it's you know, like Chris Chester said, you think you've got 2 weeks, and all of a sudden you're down to 11 days, and you know,
and also as well, he gave his, you know, his players, you know, 3 or 4 days off in this office, so there's no doubt, you know, the players will be there'll be down a few quiet ones and all this sort of thing. But now, you know, all the schedules change and all this sort of thing. So
it's Chris Chester said, he said, actually, I don't think the people that make these decisions don't realise that we don't just actually turn up and play.
Correct.
We have to prepare for playing. I think looking at some performances recently, hey Chris, if you're listening, I'm only joking. Richard said that.
And he's a Wakefield fan.
Yeah, I'm supposed to be going to Castle on Friday.
Yeah, we're going to send you into enemy territory.
I'm going to say after we're going incognito.
You will. We've got to talk about this blowing the whistle report. It's in League Weekly today, and look, I'm not critical of some journalists. I think sometimes we don't go deep enough. I think this has gone very deep into the RFL, and former Super League referees have come out and labelled the Red Hall setup dysfunctional. George Stokes, Richard Silverwood, Matt Thomason, three of the referees that have come out and had their say regarding the overall setup. And you know, some of these claims, you know, and let's be fair, Daniel Lockwood is not going to go to press with this unless he's 100% sure of what he's saying. Members of the match officials department have been subjected to humiliating abuse, including the homophobic taunting of one referee. Complaints have been swept under the carpet by RFL Human Resources Department and COO Ralph Rimmer. The league's best referee by a mile, Richard Silverwood, was got rid of, at least in part, for standing up to former head of match officials John Sharp. But you might query that best referee by a mile bit, but the point remains. Under Sharp's replacement, Steve Ganson, mistreated refs remain afraid to speak out for fear of losing their job. Morale within the department at an all-time low, and it took the suicide of referee Chris Leatherbarrow for the RFL to set referees' welfare seriously. Some pretty strong claims in there, Phil. And
absolutely damning, you would say. The RFL have to make a statement in response to those allegations. This isn't one that somebody can't be held responsible for. Those are the kind of allegations that if you made them in an open court, obviously you would expect somebody to stand up for the defence. So I don't see any way that this issue is going to be hidden. I think it's a wonderful piece of journalism. It's why...
Has there been a response from the RFL about it at all?
No, it's Bank Holiday Monday.
I'm just looking at there. Just look at a response from Red Hall. What does that say there, Matt?
Not a lot.
On the right hand side? What does it say from Red
Hall? I read part of it and I got bored because you don't actually say anything.
It's nonsense, right.
I've
okay.
got to be honest.
Right.
But they have actually made specific allegations against certain people. Now, obviously, John Sharp doesn't work in that department anymore, but the process by which Richard Silverwood's claims were dealt with is something. And I remember, as you all will, the Paul Sterling case with Leeds, that again was about procedure that wasn't followed, and it may well have been that it was overlooked. It may well have been that perhaps the decision at the end of it wasn't quite what Leeds were expecting, but they were held accountable for the fact that they hadn't followed procedure. Now, if this is the same, if this is proven, then somebody has to be made accountable. The one thing that we have never been good at in rugby league is A, transparency. Well, the two things we've never, it sounds like the Spanish Inquisition, is transparency and accountability. So if something is now out in the open, and we felt there was something odd about, you know, the length of time it took for the Richard Silverwood case, and it became almost, oh, he's decided to retire rather than there's been reasons why he wants to get rid of him. Sam Ansell is another one who was, obviously has left the sport. And at a time when full-time refereeing and was lauded as the way we needed to go, to start losing so many of them because either they didn't want to go full-time or they didn't feel the culture of being full-time suited them. There's a lot of money been invested in that part of the business that obviously has been wasted.
Also as well, and you know, let's just have a look at in rugby league in general, certainly from supporters' point of view and this sort of thing. Do you think the supporters will think, well, it doesn't really matter, they're only referees. Do you think they'll be concerned from everywhere within the game, send them over to support, because we all know, you know, what supporters think, the referees, the performances, this sort of, do you think they'll take it and say, hold on, this is going a little bit too far here?
I think we know what supporters think of any governing body, and they basically think they can't do the job.
Mm.
But what you rarely get is evidence of this scale.
Yeah.
So I think there are a lot of people in rugby league who, at the moment, don't seem to have an idea of what the overall strategy is for the sport.
If I don't mind asking you, what has Ralph Rimmer got to do with head of referees? What's his purpose?
It falls under his brief as
what's his brief?
Chief Operating Officer.
All right, got you. Yeah, I just wondered why Ralph Rimmer was.
Well, John Sharp would have reported to Ralph Rimmer, so ultimately, Ralph Rimmer would have made a decision that said, this is how we're going to deal with it.
Got you. Right, okay.
So
realistically, he has got an important role with this department, hasn't he?
Absolutely. And I think we've looked at the general manager of Super League, Blake Solly, who seemed quite a progressive bloke, but not been replaced, 3 months down the line? We've got Kevin Sinfield being appointed now, which is a great appointment if you can get somebody of that calibre in the organisation, until we hear that he's only working 2 days a week. And you looked at his job description when the press release came out, thought, oh, that's a full-time job. How's he going to do all of that in 2 days? And again, the thought is perhaps we're only paying him for 2 days. Well, either we need somebody like him in the organisation 5 days a week and we've got to pay him 5 days a week, or are we doing this on the cheap, if you like? All of these things add up. You add all of them together, and fans, I think, would then say, I'm really not sure what the strategy is for the sport. You know, the eights we can debate and say, is it successful, but the governing body have basically said, you've got it for 3 years, take it or leave it. An 8-year deal with a broadcaster. You know, in this day and age where the media world changes every 2 minutes, you know, and yes, there's security of knowing that you've got income coming in for the next 8 years, but are you hamstringing yourself by not being able to go back to the market and say, we're proud of our product, we've had a brilliant Challenge Cup final, would another broadcaster bid twice as much? All of that you put in a pot, and somebody says, someone at Red Hall needs to stand up and say, we actually, it's not just about making money. This is why we think we're good at doing our job.
So look at this thing here now with these referees, this, you know, blowing the whistle, these two guys, what I've done here. Whose head should rule for this then? Ganson or Rimmers? Who's responsible for this?
I guess we have to go through due process. And
yeah, I understand that, but surely, you know, somebody is accountable for this, because they've let it happen, haven't they?
It's usually the man right at the top, isn't it?
I think the first.
So
thing,
is that Rimmer or is it Ganson?
I think the first thing we need is a response. The governing body has to respond.
They'll deny it, won't they?
They have to refuse, but they will
in some sort of power, won't they? They will try in some sort of department.
I think the magnitude of what has been accused, certainly with the the homophobic taunting, which is a sport we have moved to Iran. Mm.
Castleford got fined, what was it, £50,000?
They got fined 40 grand. The governing body, not long ago, got money from Stonewall for being one of the organisations that did have a policy in place. But again, it needs to, the victim of that alleged at this stage homophobic abuse needs to come forward and say, yes, it's true. The victim of the bullying, alleged, needs to come forward and say, yes, it's true. At the moment, they are allegations.
You see, also, as well, we're talking about this these allegations. Nell Silverwood's got involved because in being disciplined for his misdemeanour up at the Magic Weekend now, will the RFL come and tell us exactly why he's been disciplined, just to get back, well, just to throw some more spanner in the works?
He retired, didn't he? So we don't know.
One of the comments here gets swept under the carpet. If he's done something wrong, then he should have been sacked.
Yeah, exactly.
And I bet it comes out now.
This is what I'm saying here now. Now he's going involved. I bet you it comes out a little bit now.
What has happened? The different things.
So it's a huge one. I just wonder if after years of, like you said,
things get swept under the carpet, nothing gets questioned. Well, questions are being asked now.
Well, I think
that gives you strings to pull at, and when people start pulling at strings, things start falling down.
Well, the other thing that I think is a real big issue is this duty of care. We mention it a lot with regard to players. Well, obviously there's been an issue with Matt Thomason, where he hasn't, it appears, been given the kind of backup that the referee, he should have done. Whatever has happened in his private life that has been quite clearly settled in court. There is a judgment that says he was not guilty of anything.
For those that don't know, he was accused, wasn't he, of assaulting a child. He was charged with the
public
assault,
yeah,
of a 10-year-old boy at a junior rugby league match in his native Warrington. And he says it was the start of an ordeal which he feels his employers totally abandoned him. Basically, it went to court and the guy who was a witness got
absolutely ripped apart. Yeah. I mean, the child involved was his son.
And in his own words, he said his son was misbehaving. He pulled him to one side. His son gave him a bit of lip, so he smacked him on the legs and that was it. They went home. And then all of a sudden the police turn up at his door, he gets arrested. And it looks like the RFL, if you're looking at this, have just cast him aside.
We've only got his side of the story at the moment, which is why I think the RFL need to make a statement. But if it's true that he was just abandoned and there was no welfare follow-up, and part of the issue in this article as well is that the two referees that are no longer referees, that Stokes and Thomason, are talking to Richard Silverwood on a daily basis to make sure that he's okay, that the game has let these referees down. Now, if that's true, and we've gone big on state of mind and all the other fantastic projects that we do, but we haven't applied it to the referees, somebody needs to be accountable for that.
We do. Interesting part in the piece, George Stokes, says, as a referee, you take it from every single angle. He said, you get abuse from the fans. He actually didn't say that, but it's a bit stronger. But he said, you get abuse from the fans, you expect that, you're a referee, fine. You get abuse from coaches and you get abuse when you come off the field all the time, but then you come to work and you get abused because you've made a bad decision. You sat in a room and you're being ridiculed for it and you're not being supported. He resigned his position because the RFL were insistent he give up a lucrative IT job. And wouldn't go full time, so basically,
and yet we've just had, and yet we've just had a part time referee.
Are we
a big enough sport to be able to throw talent
I don't see what it matters.
Absolutely.
Or you make it worth the guy. If you want the guys, if we're good enough, you say, right, we will make you an offer to come in.
But at the end of the day, though, it's not made the referees any better being full-time, Mark, has it? It's not made them any better.
This is the argument, isn't it? If you've got full-time guys that are just as good, well, what does it matter whether they're full-time or part-time?
Exactly.
Because they clearly haven't worked. But if you have got guys that are very good, then you should, in my opinion, make effort to keep them.
Mm. Isn't there a wider issue here as well about full-time refereeing? As in, how do you fill the time? If you fill the time in a room with just you there, over-analysing each other's performance, and it breeds this, to use the word again, culture of abuse, then something's clearly wrong in how you're administering full-time refereeing.
Yeah.
That perhaps one of the reasons referees have grown apart from players, but particularly fans, is that they don't go in the bar anymore.
And shake hands with players after game.
But they don't get feedback, because all they're in is this rarefied environment amongst themselves where they're giving each other abuse. That can't be healthy. The great thing about Gareth Hewer after the game on Saturday was that he immediately did a couple of media interviews. He came out of the dressing room and there's the mixed zone area where you have to wait for the players and officials to pass before you can do your interviews. And Gareth Hewer came out, and I think a couple of people were really impressed with the way he'd handled the game, and he was a bit of a story in the lead-up that he'd given up a shift at Sellafield to come down and do the game. And a couple of media outlets said, could we have a quick word with you? Now, he checked with the minders that he has from the RFL that it was okay, and they looked a bit shocked, because normally referees aren't asked.
Why do referees need minders?
Oh, they have a whole cortege.
I've seen it. It's a joke. Why do they need minders?
Gareth Hewer looked at the match commissioner and said, basically, am I allowed to do it? And the match commissioner, because I don't think he'd ever been in that position before, he wasn't going to get anybody on the radio going, hang on a minute, I'll just ask Nigel. Just allowed him to do it. And again, it's another great story and a bit of a breath of fresh air. And the fact that we wanted to interview the referee for positive purposes, you can do that because he's part-time. I'm pretty sure if that had been a full-time official, they're like, I'm sorry, no, we don't do interviews. It's not part of what we do.
What, like the new rugby director?
Yeah. I'll tell you what, though, I can just see it now. They're in the referees room on a Monday morning. I wonder if they have a competition between themselves when in there. You know, I wonder if they have the volume on. You know, to listen to the referees shouting and bawling like they do. Hold, go, and stand square, tackle low, well, get your head in, you know, like the coach and what they do. I wonder if they have the volume on in the, because quite simply it's annoying for everybody, isn't it? But still, you know, whether we like it or not, without referees, we haven't got, you know, we've umpires, so we haven't got it. So this is hugely damaging to the association from a point of view. They were supposed to get better by professional, being full-time professionals, get themselves up to fitness levels. They all do all the fitness tests now. They all do the nutritionist and all this sort of thing. Tell you what, this is hugely damaging.
Well,
you go
right back to the very beginning of the programme and you were talking about one of the great qualities of Harry Jepson.
Mr. Jepson.
Was
yeah.
respect.
Correct.
So we want the referees to have respect. We want to give them respect. I understand about earning respect, but I still think that we should look after referees. Mm. But they're not giving each other respect
exactly.
in their own room
that's
on a Monday.
I was just going to touch that, Phil. They don't even have respect for themselves, do they?
That's
as an organisation.
So whoever is in charge of that has to be culpable if it's proven.
But I've said it a few times as well on the show this year with the way that referees are and with the players. They can't wait to get off the field. You know, there's no respect from there anymore. You know, so until that starts coming back, and I can reassure you, players will be reading this, and obviously we all know with social media now, it will be even less, as you've just hit the nail on the head there, Phil. If they can't look after their own organisation,
absolutely,
where are they going to get the respect from? Where are they going to get it from?
Interesting times. I think there's more to come, isn't there? And there is another one next week, isn't there? They've said there'll be more to come next week in League Weekly, so fair play to them. They've landed the scoop on that one, but
I think the sort of programme this is on a Monday night, we would welcome comment from either side. If anybody wanted to come on the show, either from
that
the referees
chair is always open.
Or from the RFL to defend it, I just think that...
I don't know if they want to come and sit next to me.
This is something that you can brush under the carpet.
Neither do I, mate, and I'm paid to be here.
Yeah, I think I might have to go into another office just to link
can
me.
Can we get you on location?
Link me into a bit of ashes, isn't it?
It's turning to the episode.
Somewhere at the top of Mount Everest. You've got to make your own way there.
I thought you were going to say Beirut, but it's only Belial. I live around the corner. Belial's like Beirut.
It's turning to that famous episode of Have I Got News You where Dennis Hattersley didn't turn up and replaced him with a tub of lard just sat there.
In front of the don't be calling me a tub of lard, will you? Bit arse, which is sure, right?
Be interesting to know what people think that have read the piece.
Oh.
It is.
I wonder if the RFL then, if they wait till next week until the second part of this comes out then to give us a response. What do you reckon? How long do you think it'll take?
I think they've got to come out before, haven't they?
I think Danny Lockwood has got a very good close working relationship with Nigel Wood. I think Nigel will have known that this is going to be published. Mm. So they have to be formulating a response now, not waiting for the second bit to come out.
Mm. We'll see. I think the Heat just been turned up a notch or two.
Does it ever?
The chair is always open. We're not like other programmes and media outlets.
Well, I'll tell you what, another referee, he went to Australia, 18 months ago? He was on here in the show, Tim Rovey. He was outstanding. Even the other referee,
Rob Hicks,
came in. They were outstanding there. So, yeah, if there's any referees out there, if you want to come in, give us an insight. You know, we're only open and honest here. Give us an insight, and if it's right, we'll back you up. We'll say, well, stop it then. You know, stop it. And you know, Mr. Ganson, tell you what, won't be the show. Mr. Ganson, who was the showman, the show pony, he didn't like the criticism what he got, so, you know, why are you letting this go on?
Great to see Tim Robey get his first NRL game.
Oh, did he?
Yes, he's been the referee in the pocket this week. I think the Roosters game, but he has actually done his time in the junior grades, done his touch judging, he's now been on the field for the first time. And
I tell you what as well, you know, because when you look at all the referees, the people who have been like the off-meal match officials at the side there, you know, I see Colin Morris, I see John Holdsworth, Dave Campbell, you know, from my, you know, this sort of thing. Surely they know this is going on, or it has been going on, and the experience what they got, I wonder if they've been allowed any sort of input and say, hey, hold on, because at the end of the day, you know, at times I go back to my day and say, hey, I'll tell you what, in our day, this would not have happened. This would not have happened. It's as simple as that. So I wonder if they have any sort of influence. What do you reckon, Phil?
Dave Campbell's son, Chris, is now one of the young referees coming through, isn't he?
So I'm sure
he's feeding it back to his dad.
Absolutely, this is what I'm saying. You know, and then I'm just wondering if they are allowed any input and say, hold on, yeah? Mm. This is not allowed, you know, because at the end of the day, in whichever sport you play, you know, to get the best out of you as an individual, and they're all a team collectively. By the way, they don't work as a team now, do they? You know, when you see these officials all warm up, oh, boy, oh, boy. The referee just goes, right, I'm the show pony. I'm getting away from you lot because I'm the main, I'm the main part of the show here. Have you seen them when they're all, they're not together at all, are they? You know, but the feedback, what I say, Kendall's son, he must be, Campbell's son, he must be saying, hey dad, you know, this is going on. Is this right? Or did it go on in your day? You know, this saw that the guys who have been there, seen it and done it, worn the t-shirt, you know, it needs putting a stop to. It needs putting a stop to.
I would think, looking at the people that have put these allegations out, then they're not doing it for their own self. They're not looking for a route back into rugby league necessarily. They're pointing something out that is at the heart of the referees department that needs looking at and addressing. And the very least the sport should do is you know, dignify their complaints by investigating it properly and making a statement.
I'll tell you what, Billy Thompson wouldn't have listened to him, I'll tell you. Oh, Billy.
Wouldn't have happened.
Yeah, it wouldn't have, yeah, exactly.
Stan Wall, it wouldn't have happened. It just wouldn't have happened.
Fred Lindop would have said, Robbie Whitfield, Allsworth, who's, Campbell was a good referee himself, you know, the guys in, Colin Morris was a good referee.
You couldn't have imagined amongst that group of people there would have been allegations of bullying,
and
or
what they had as well, Phil. What they all had, you know. At times, you know, we might give them a volley. Don't worry about that. You know, I know myself. I give them a few volleys. I can reassure you. But they had respect.
Yes,
they had respect. As soon as that final whistle went, when he shook hands with your opponent, he went straight to the referee and said, "Thanks very much. I don't want to see you. I don't want to see you very soon." But that's a, you know, that's a sort of camaraderie.
Billy Thompson,
we had
gone and had a beer.
Yeah.
In the spectators'
absolutely.
Bar after
absolutely.
The game.
Absolutely.
And some players would have come up to him and said, oh, you know, you're a bit harsh with me.
Yeah, correct. Yeah, yeah,
but
yeah.
Fans
yeah.
would have said to him, oh, I yeah. didn't like that. But he would have been there.
Correct.
He would have got the feedback. He would have got the respect for being
absolutely.
In there with them.
Absolutely.
And now they're almost like a protected species. Mm. When they arrive, when they leave, it's in a group.
And
no,
do you know what? They wanted the feedback as well from players. Mm. You know, two of them, they were brilliant referees as well, but they're Australian, unfortunately. Greg McCallum and Bill Harrigan. Do you know what Greg and Bill did? Certainly when they refereed the test matches over here for us, they used to say to us, after we've had the dinner, where are you going for a beer? Well, we're going to town hall, town this sort of thing. They'll come and join us, you know, from there. And again, it's getting that sort of feedback. It was great camaraderie. But again, it's that word, respect. And that's what they had. And I'll tell you, boy, oh boy, this is absolutely useless. The damage and it needs addressing very quickly, because at the end of the day, every game needs officials.
Absolutely.
How are they going to entice? How are they going to entice now? Because in 20 years' time, these guys are going to be going. How are they going to entice anybody if this sort of bullying and name calling is going on?
And if you're a 14-year-old kid that's just taken on a path of refereeing,
yeah.
and you read an article like that and you go, actually, I'll go and referee hockey instead because I've just seen it in the Olympics and it seemed quite good. We can't afford to lose the next generation coming through because they don't want to be part of whatever may or may not be going on.
Absolutely.
We'll see. It's all interesting.
I'll tell you what as well, mate. Now, it's talking about this England coach. You know what? We're just talking about young lads might not want to be referees. Well, I'll tell you what. If you want to be the England assistant coach, you're going to need treble A levels, grade A's.
What?
A total... Fitness fanatic.
I'm guessing you haven't got A-levels.
I can't spell A-levels, never mind, got them. I'm from Belisle. You're going to be A-levels in nutrition, A-level in psychology, A-level in human performance, A-level in... I don't know our listeners who are out there, if you've seen it in the League Express today, about the position as the England assistant coach. Well, it's astonishing, lads, isn't it? It's astonishing. Have you seen the job description, what you need to do?
Do the other assistants have those A-levels and such?
How poor is it that we're having to offer that job on the back of a trade newspaper? I don't think Sam Allardyce has put an advert in the, non-league weekly. I need an assistant, lads.
What, in the hope that the bloke from Gillingham's going to apply?
Exactly.
I'll tell you what, I'm just going to read three out here. Providing contribution to the monthly and yearly programme review, right, okay, setting standards and behaviours that align to the England trademarks, or whatever that is,
what
I don't
is
know,
the England trademark?
And then undertake RFL media requirements as required throughout the
year.
Hold on,
yeah.
Is this what I'm saying? The head coach won't do interviews, so I, if you say to Wayne Bennett, Wayne, I'm your assistant, but will you go do an interview, please? Honestly, do you know what, when I saw this morning, when I was reading this, I thought, England assistant coach, yeah, I want to give something back to the game, I want to be part of the international setter, I thought, yeah.
I've got all the right. qualifications with Barry,
you know. you know, I've got a bit of a CV, so I thought to myself, well, I can spell CV. What else? And then I tell you what, I got three lines down. And I thought, I've no bloody chance. No bloody chance with a job description of this.
We've got a secret weapon for you. You can go in and say, when we're lining up for the national anthem, got to wear tracksuit bottoms, because that's what won Hull the Cup. Tracksuit bottoms.
Right, I'm writing that one down.
Yep, I'm
like Dalboy here. I'm writing that
one down.
Don't
wear them sandals or the flip flops, whatever you wear.
I've got gout. I've got to do so. And you know,
funny you've never mentioned that before.
And also, leading in the coaching of identifying athletes at international competitions, as agreed on the international annual plan, working closely with the England coaching and human performance team on joint planning and preparation, all identifying players.
Scully.
Hold on, coaching identifying. Five players we do. Hold on.
What are you doing now? You're becoming a referee.
Hold on. The RFL is seeking to appoint a full-time assistant coach to support Wayne Bennett, Dennis Betts, and Paul Wellens. Jesus Christ! The England assistant coach has more responsibility than anybody.
by being full-time. First of all,
there's one thing that you can do. Now we can back this up. We've got all the clips here. Provision of effective recorded feedback to clubs and coaches on England identified players.
Yeah.
Say he's rubbish. He's no creativity.
He can't suck 10 pints and he doesn't like Chinese, so that's no good for a warm down, is it?
That's one of the 172 points that you can do. So I think at the minute you're leading.
Do we have a chance?
Do you think
it's worth a CV putting in?
Well, you might get the Super League general manager's job at the same time.
Yeah.
You never know. It might go to the wrong person. Or yeah. Bradford's chief exec job. You could get that. You could get all these jobs.
I think it's ridiculous that our great game is applying.
I can't understand if it's a full-time position. Obviously, who are they hoping to get? There must be some coaches, quality coaches, who are out of work at the moment that they should be appointing.
How did Dennis Betts and Paul Wellens get the same roles?
Absolutely.
If this one's been advertised and they have the same, they have the same job.
And
so
theirs is a part-time role.
But it's a fixed contract to 31st of December next year.
But also as well, fellas, here, right,
so
the
it's
key...
a 12-month deal.
We'll just be reading a few of them key... But the key responsibilities are...
What
about the first one? What about the first one? Working close with England team manager and England coaching staff in planning all training, recovery and competition for athletes associated with England senior team. If it don't go right, you're getting the sack. Wayne Bennett, Dennis Betts and Paul Wellens are all right, but you're getting the sack.
I can imagine you, Scott, in the dressing room after England have lost to Australia 58-0. Don't worry, lads. Recovery session down at Stoggy's. 8 pints. I'll see you there at 12.
It's a gallon and a half, so that's 12. And if you don't like Chinese, you don't get selected.
Must be able to find Australians with passports.
But that sounds to me like driving around the ice baths to the players that are going to be picked for England.
It's laughable, honestly. You know,
but surely, let's be honest. Yeah, a candidate like Andy Kelly or Francis Cummings would be perfect for that role. Why are we just not appointing them? We've got people out there that could fulfil this role.
Yeah, but Phil, right?
Why are we advertising it?
Phil, let's have a look here now. Let's be serious about this. Well, I'm going to try and be serious about it, but the England set-up at this moment in time, right? Wayne Bennett head coach, Jamie Peacock manager, Dennis Betts assistant coach, and Paul Wellens assistant coach. How many more do we need? How many coaches do they need to listen to? Who's responsible for all this? I tell you what, it's the England assistant coach. But from a serious point of view, how many people do we need?
But I'm also assuming
because there'll be a media manager involved, won't there?
Wayne Bennett has to have a say in this, presumably as well. How are you going to do that?
Well, I tell you what, if I put my CV in, we won't look at it because I spent 10 days away and I was bored to death. You know, I had 6 cans in 10 days, it did me head in.
Or do the people if you're a conspiracy theorist, which nobody here is.
No, nobody here is.
You don't need to be a conspiracy theorist for this stuff, do you?
An Aussie can apply for that job.
Oh, there we go.
But they can't they?
Well, yeah,
because
everybody
it's, because it's gone out to the general. So
won't be for sure.
The next thing we'll find is Ben Walker's the England assistant.
Won't be for sure what qualifies me for this job. I have my level 3 minimum of a equivalent certificate to be a coach. So that gives me one tick in the box. But you have a look at the other 26. All right, Richard, a bit harsh. I'll do the funnies. Stay away. But
I think we should put a CV together for you.
I tell you what, yeah,
and we should put a secret camera on you.
I get interviewed, and there's Wayne Bennett sat there. Well, I was bored after 10 days of Wayne Bennett, and then Jamie Peacock, the manager. I think everybody knows about the situation with me and Mr. Peacock, and then Dennis Spetz and Paul Wellens. Tell you what, it would be an interesting interview, wouldn't it? It would be, because you talk about rehabilitation. We was at Leeds, me and Maskey, we roomed together on Saturday, so we were reminiscing like we did, and like in today's game, you know, they go swimming and this sort of thing. We started going swimming. It lasted 3 weeks because Ellery didn't want to do swimming, so it lasted 3 weeks. So our first session with the swimming, we were all dive bombing and bombing off a diving board rather than doing rehabilitation. We got kicked out after 15 minutes. And it lasted 3 weeks. So, anyway, swimming and rehabilitation in my 40.
Let's just do it. We'll do a brief reenactment of Gary's thing coming through. And we, we've got a CV here from Gary Schofield for the England assistant coach job. Yeah. Cheers, Gary. Thanks.
It's a bit harsh, Mr.
I think that's what'll happen, actually. We will give you a reference. Might not be a good one, but we'll give you one. We'll obviously want compensation for releasing you from your deal.
That's a great idea.
We could be making out of this.
But also as well, fellas, a couple of things here. When I took my coaching badges in the day, you know, and when I took my theory test, I thought to myself, boy, rugby league's, it's not this hard to play. Rugby league's not this difficult. And then, when you read all this, regarding, you know, the human performance team and this sort of thing, identifying development. This is international players you're coaching. Surely they could catch, pass, tackle and support. I'll tell you what, if they can't catch, tackle, support and, you should be there in the first place. Eh?
I think we should aim higher, right? That's obviously the assistant coach. Gary Schofield, Rugby League Hall of Famer, OBE, it's been on Question of Sport, all that kind of stuff. The French national job is up for grabs.
Now you're talking. I'm interested for the French job. Now you are talking.
No, I didn't say South Africa.
South Africa.
Oh, yeah. I've been there for a couple of weeks. Does that sound South African?
South French.
Come on, this is a serious show. Come on. Hey, yeah, I'm in for French. What about the even at the French? Even at the French job, they get that. Get some more paper.
No, they might entertain you there, Scott.
Yeah, he wants the Frenchman, doesn't he? The guy who's taking it. Yeah, Richie. Yeah, guys, he's got the bullets. He's got the bullet, Richard, from the French show. But, from a serious point of view here, as you mentioned there, Mark Wilson, to be honest, why have we advertised it like this?
Didn't advertise it for the other two.
Honestly, from a serious point of view, I read the first three, and I thought, well, I can't do that.
Because it's going to an Aussie, but that advert makes it look transparent.
Really?
Huh? I couldn't apply for the job because I don't qualify for it. Even though I played over 500 first team games, played for Great Britain 46 times, captained Great Britain 13 times, been on 4 Great Britain tours, I don't qualify.
Yeah, but there's a bloke that's more badges than you, so you should get it. Friday, Leeds Salford live on Radio Yorkshire. Saturday, Hull KR Lee, that could be the biggest game of the season. After Hull KR went to Salford and won. And Lee, as we know, already beaten a Super League side, so it's another busy, busy weekend of rugby league here. What do you mean, Billy Boston's getting his own statue in Wigan, Scott? You'll be pleased about that, mate, won't you?
Absolutely delighted, Mark, as well. Do you know what? I was speaking to another great player, Wigan player, Winter Wakefield, Bill Ashurst, and he was telling me about it, and I was hoping if I could make it over there at Wigan, I'm going to go there, because Billy Boston, legend of the game of rugby league, legend of the sport, and everybody identity, you know, we know from the olden days what the BBC brought, household names and this sort of thing. Billy Boston is not just a Wiganer, well, adopted Welshman in Wigan. We all know exactly from there. Sensational bloke. We all know how good a rugby league player he was. And fully, fully deserved. Fully deserved.
Absolutely. Mm. And it'll look magnificent.
Oh, it will. Yeah, yeah. Yeah. Do you know what? Because I think they've raised over £100,000, haven't they? And I know Leeds were trying to maybe build a statue for the great legendary John Owens. But
yep,
when Wigan fans was asked if they could make some contributions to the sponsor and what have you, no hesitation. No hesitation at all. You know, the people at Wigan, take a bow. Take a bow for the contribution you've put in there, the sponsors, you know, getting it sorted out for the great man himself with the £100,000, what it's cost. I think it's a great tribute, not just to the Wigan supporters, the Wigan public and companies. It's simple, to a great man. It is.
Indeed. Let's go look ahead to what is happening this weekend. Huge game, Hull KR Lee. We all know that win, we were there, weren't we? Hull KR's win at Salford, Scoey, has really set up Rovers now. It's very much in their hands, isn't it?
Oh, it is, without a doubt. And the way I saw him play the other week, Mark, at Salford, I don't see an issue, to be honest with you.
You think they'll get the job done?
Yeah, I do indeed. I don't see an issue with him. I don't.
What, even against a Lee team that's got the confidence of having
You know, the experience what Hull KR have had, certainly from last year, and they've had that week off. The big factor against the Salford game, and I say me and Mark were there, and I said it, the OKR players know the position what they're in, and that performance against Salford, Phil, was outstanding. They knew if they got over that one, then they know they've got the two games at home which will keep them in the Super League, and I think that was too much for
them. I think they know how to play the eights. Their only defeat in 2 years of being in the eights was at Leeds, and that was narrow.
Yeah.
They played very, very well that night in terms of keeping in the game and just, you know, playing it at their tempo. So I think this is a real litmus test for Lee. I think they did superbly to beat Salford, but I, as we said at the time, I think they've got enough points to be guaranteed one of the teams in the £1 million game. This is the game that says, do they bypass that and perhaps get promoted? I'm not sure. I think if Hull KR win and go up to 6 points, they would go above Lee as well, because their points difference is better. Then I think Rovers would have 1 foot towards safety if they win this game, and they know that, and they'll be primed for that.
It is. It's a tight one, Rich.
Well, this is the most, much like last year, this is the interesting competition. Up until the final couple of weeks of the Super 8s, and it might not be this year because we know who's going to be where it seems at the moment, but Huddersfield, you would think, would beat London on Friday night, now that they've got that first win on the board.
Don't underestimate London. They can attack. They'll score some points.
That could be, yeah. I mean, that is a big game, isn't it?
Maybe I should go there on Friday. Oh, it's difficult.
Huddersfield, London, Friday night. Scottie, can London, under Andrew Henderson, get the job done?
I just feel as though the way Huddersfield are, they're hitting a bit of form, aren't they? They're hitting a bit of form.
They're conceding a lot of points.
Yeah, I agree. And, you know, he's, again, well, I don't know if he should appoint for the England assistant job, because this would be a great job for Rick Stone. Education, I've got educate. It'll be all right doing this, but the education at this moment in time, it doesn't seem to be working just as he wants it. He hasn't got that composure.
Danny Brough at Wembley. What's he thinking about the eights at the moment? Because they've not been in this situation.
Well, if not, but I think they've got enough, but they're not playing well. He knows they're not playing well, and I think also as well, I saw Luke Robinson on a TV show the other day, and it's quite simple. You know, defensively, they're pretty poor. So as you mentioned, Phil, yeah, London can score points, but if London could get their defence sorted out, they could maybe cause an upset. But I just feel as though Huddersfield at home, Bruffy coming back, Briley's in great form. He is a support player. If it half of opportunities, then he'll score on for you. So I think Huddersfield will just have a bit too much.
I think London are a bit dangerous because they have no expectation and nobody's talking about them. They don't necessarily need to get promoted this year. I'm speaking to Andrew Henderson at Wembley, who's doing some media work, and he's just delighted with their progression at the moment. It's not a question of we need to be in the £1 million game. If we're in it, we'll do everything we can to win it. If our ground isn't Super League standard, we'll either make it or we'll find another ground. So, but I just think that this year they're a bit of a wild card. They're almost the Halifax this year. They're the team that are you should be the most wary of, because they could go out and do anything. The 28 points they scored against Leeds, was a feather in their cap, I thought, particularly when they were, 42-16 down, and they didn't give in, scored the last two tries. If Huddersfield don't take them seriously, London can score points.
Kingmakers.
Could be. But if Huddersfield win, then again, they've got one toe in safety.
Yeah. Well, it's all... I think it's set up brilliantly now. I think this one's going right down to the last... Might even be the last play of the qualifiers.
You would think Leeds would... I mean, they're not going down on this.
No, Leeds are
right.
I don't
even know why I'm saying secure, but mathematically, they should beat Salford this week, who... Yeah.
Well, it's last chance alone for Salford.
Yeah, it is. Yeah, but about Leeds, they say quite. I don't think we need to talk about Leeds anymore because they're going to go 7 from 7. They're safe. You know, all we'd be doing is just putting a bit of spin on to say, you know, well, okay, we know what the season's been like. We know it's been poor. But you've been very disappointed, so we don't need to talk about Salford, boy oh boy.
If Leeds win, Salford are in £1 million. Yeah,
oh, they are. Well, they are going to win. They're going to beat Leeds on Friday.
If Salford lose, they're playing to get into the £1 million.
But I think with the fixtures they've still got, they will get in. I still think that if Leeds win on Friday night, Salford and Lee will play in £1 million.
Leeds will beat Salford quite easily as well, to be honest with you. They will.
I still think Lee are going up. I think Lee are going up automatically.
Do you think they win Saturday?
I'm not saying they win Saturday. I don't think they need to win Saturday, to be quite honest. I think it's almost one of them. The points difference might be what does for them. But it's not over and done with.
Not yet.
We were saying OKR defended really, really well. But Salford could have had five or six tries. Yeah. So
they could have done against Lee. Don't forget they dropped the ball over the line four times against Lee.
Yeah, but what I'm saying is, Lee will create chances as well. If they finish them off, I'm not so sure Hull KR is as bulletproof as we all think. I think they've had a bad week this week without even playing. Next week could be an even worse week.
I think they'll be all right. I think their spirit... I think they'll have done the work over this week that... we'll just see them edge Lee out, and then it becomes rolls on week as to who gets into this £1 million game.
If you had to go, then who are the three that go up then, Scully? You've had a few bashes at who's going to win what and not got many right, so we'll give you another one now.
Well, Leeds are going up.
Yeah.
The Giants. OKR for mine.
Yeah, I think so.
And then the £1 million game is Levy Salford for me.
I think exactly the same.
Yeah, I think Salford, with the last three games, they've got all the Championship clubs. They'll get themselves into the £1 million game. So, Lee and Salford for mine. And so, the three who are going up there, staying up anyway, Giants, Leeds, OKR, and I said the £1 million game, Salford and
the
Lee.
Interesting thing will be to where that game is played. Because will Lee finish above Salford and have the home ground advantage? Because that would help them.
Rich?
Well, at the moment, we're thinking Salford are going to beat London, Batley and Fulham.
I don't think
they will.
I think they're going to lose.
Where do they play London? Is it at Salford or at London?
It's at Salford.
If it was at London, it might be, a bit testing times.
I think they'll beat the three champions.
So, if they do, Lee need to win one more game then, don't they, to be on 8 points as well?
I am going to say London are going to beat one of Huddersfield or Salford.
Could be this Friday.
Don't
miss it.
I don't think all is as well as people would have you believe at Huddersfield. That's my gut feeling. And it's all right battering Batley, but they conceded a lot of points.
Did
and
it?
That conceding them points might be what means they don't go up. Don't know.
This is a competition you don't want to be in. It's great. It's watching.
Going to the wire.
Yeah, it's
going to the wire.
People's jobs are on the line in this competition, especially for those Super League teams who perhaps haven't prepared as well as they should have this year.
Interesting. He's got three wins to get in £1 million.
He's got all quiet, hasn't he, Mr. Kukas, at this moment in time? So he should, because the pressure's all on the players and the coaching staff, which has been brought on by himself, as we all know from there. So, yes, it's interesting from Mr. Kukas. Very interesting.
What were the results today? Should we give them out?
Yes, sorry, I did have a look earlier, but...
I've been updating people all afternoon.
I've got where.
No.
I'll give them you now.
Offering the full rugby league service as we do.
Yeah, no, that's fair enough. Whitehaven 10.
I've got a great tweet in a minute, Bella.
Halifax 30. Swinton 19. Workington 12. Oldham 24. Sheffield 54. And Dewsbury 26. Bradford 36.
It's like James Alexander Gordon.
It was.
Dewsbury Rams 1.
Bradford Bulls won.
His
that was not the score, by the way.
It would be great if it was, wouldn't it? I was hoping someone would hit a drop goal just before half-time in the Challenge Cup. 1-0 at half-time. Here we go. Con says, Salford's ground is unavailable on the day of the £1 million game of Sale are at home. Dun, dun, dun.
Usually play as a caterer, then. play as a care raiser. Right, predictions this week then, are we going through? Wigan witness?
Yeah, go on then.
Wigan witness. Wigan, they're in a bit of form, they like it. Witness are pretty happy that they made the top 8, so Wigan quite easy for me. I'm going Wigan 24.
Wigan going top of the league for me this weekend.
I hope Sean wins.
They can't on points difference, but joint top with Hull.
He doesn't get caught on camera. Wigan, by plenty.
Witness.
Matt, we're going witness.
Really?
I don't think I said it this year. Are you going bonkers?
You're
going bonkers again.
Clearly, we ain't got much time.
Right, Cass with the great form. Denny Solomon again. Hat trick for me.
Cass
quite easy. Wakefield have gone. Cass by 24.
Draw.
Cass. Oh, don't you say draw it? It's all right.
Cass by a few.
Saint Helens, there's only one winner here. That's Saint Helens by 24. I'm going 24, everybody, this week so far.
Yeah,
24.
Saints.
They'll be rumming the scrum from Hull.
I'm going Hull.
Yeah.
Huddersfield, London.
Huddersfield, too much for mine. Brian's back in form, Brough is back. Yeah, Hull for me. Giants for me.
Huddersfield narrowly.
High scoring game, so Huddersfield 8, London 2.
London. Leeds, Salford.
Oh, Leeds easy. Quite simple as that. They'll be looking to put on the show. Leeds by 24.
Leeds not easy, but the emotion around Harry Jepson will pull through.
Leeds.
Yeah, go Leeds. Catalan Warrington.
Now this is interesting. Catalans are totally out of form. Warrington, they'll still be smarting a little bit, but still they want to, you know, maybe get the league leader's shield. So I'm going for the Warrington to turn the Catalans over.
Okay.
I think Catalan.
Warrington.
Catalan. Yeah. Interesting. Very good indeed.
Hulkiar for me, and I think they'll be looking to cement their figure. I'm going Hulkiar by 14.
Yep, Hulkiar, but they won't be singing that song.
Rovers just.
Lee. I've been the odd man out this weekend, very much so. Very much been the odd man out. And if you want to back up Gary's application to be England assistant coach, let us know at RL on RY. I'm sure you'll have plenty of support there, Scully. Are you off out celebrating the rest of the week then, now the Black and Whites have won something?
And might have a couple of quiet ones as well, in respect to Mr. Jepson tomorrow. He wouldn't mind that. I think that myself and a few boys might meet up tomorrow or something, but not looking forward to all the rugby league this weekend.
Yeah, another busy week of action here. Leeds, Salford on Friday. On Saturday, it's Hull Carly. And on Sunday, we were supposed to be doing Cass Wakey.
Thanks,
damn
Sky.
Damn you, Sky. Damn you. So I don't know what we might do. We might all go out with Scully on the beer. So we'll be
back in the studio
at 3:05. He's a bit of a lightweight these days, he's Scully. Scully, thanks for your time, as always. Phil Kaplan, thank you as well. And Richard Shorite, thanks to you for listening. It's been Rugby League on Radio Yorkshire.